Thanks for a nice introduction. So again, I apologize for making you to come forward as a fifth talk of the week or some N plus first talk of the week. So again, I'm novice to this cold gases field, so I apologize in advance for being very unsophisticated. So we're talking about dynamics of excitations in a one-dimensional Bose liquid. And I think just to set the stage, I'll briefly remind about BEC in higher dimensions, which people, of course, know very well here. So for BEC in higher, well, in dimension larger than 1 and t equals 0, the weapon of choice, at least at weak interactions, is basically Menfield Bogolyubov theory. So what one does is, in the four-Fermion interaction, sorry, four boson interaction, it's my background, separate condensate wave functions, so telling that, okay, without interactions, just all particles collapse into the ground state with lowest value of P. And if one does Menfield with having macroscopic occupation of the k equals 0 state, then one ends up with Bogolyubov Hamiltonian, which is bilinear in operators psi. It's not quadratic, but bilinear. And then you can rotate the basis and diagonalize it. This rotation can be achieved by means of the famous UV transformation. And I'll just mention that these factors U and V, they of course depend on P, and at in the limit of small p, U and V behave as 1 over square root P. So the spectrum of the quadratic Bogolyubov Hamiltonian, again, I'm almost ashamed to remind, but just again for annotations, is up squared plus p squared over 2m squared. So if p is larger than something, then it's just free particles, right? Just p squared over 2m, I can take out the square root. And it's small momenta, it's linear spectrum, it's the sound mode. So it's in a way, it's a collective excitation. And the weak interaction case, meaning that in some sense U is smaller. I think it's mu much less than n not to power 1/3. Then in this case, I can write even numerator here. It's square root mu. And this is true for p much less than mu. So that's what happens to the Hamiltonian now. Okay, it's very nice collective mode, but how would you see it? Again, here my unsophistication comes up. I don't know what are the best experimental ways, but from the very general point of view, I would say that, okay, one should try to look at the response function, right? Just to couple the density of bosons to some external field, send a wave, and see how it's absorbed. So in other words, one can try to calculate the structure factor, which was the main subject of yesterday's talks for fermions. S of q omega is just density-density correlation function Fourier transformed and imaginary part. But here it becomes very simple because if I recall that the Fourier component of the density operator is put as psi k plus q dagger psi k, sum over k. And there is a macroscopic occupation of the k equals 0 state. I can replace it essentially by psi naught psi q dagger plus conjugate. So surprise, surprise, S is more or less the spectral function. So the structure factor is proportional to the imaginary part of green function of bosons taking it vector Q and energy omega. In other words, when you, so to speak, shine light, you take a particle from the ground state, which is k equals zero state, and put it into some state characterized by Q omega. In particular, if you shine light with high Q, basically you hit into the free particle part of spectrum, and that's it. So, and we have quadratic Hamiltonian, right? So HB is quadratic. So then we know that this is delta function. Omega minus epsilon B of Q. It's epsilon B. So this is it. So essentially, the structure of it is delta function. Basically, the delta function, the structure factor defines the collective mode. That's it. So this is in higher dimensions. It's all very simple and beautiful. So now let's look at 1D.
This is just a weak interacting limit, I guess.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'll be looking for a while.
Yes.
Thanks for the reminder. Actually, thanks a lot. Yeah. So what I wanted. So it's great audience, yeah.
This polymorph is U and V diverges as P equal
to H. Yes, yeah.
The answer is bosonic systems from the commutation relation. It's still a little bit counterintuitive. It looks like a superposition of particle and the whole, but right. All the component diverges.
Yeah, it's okay, but I mean for, I hear what you're saying. It is indeed somewhat unpleasant, especially for people who grew up in fermion physics, but but for bosons,
I think it's the fermions
but for bosons there is this relation. Instead of plus, there is minus, and therefore the commutation relation is beautifully preserved.
Two very large number.
Yeah, the two very large numbers, and they beautifully cancel each other in a proofer. So. I want again to it's a great audience. So let me continue a little bit. So the delta function indeed, it's a delta function as long as we are sticking to Bogoliubov part of Hamiltonian. But of course, when I do this thing, I throw away lots of other terms. And now, I mean, I'm not the first who would include other terms, and it was done slightly before I was born by by Spartak Beliaev. And there is a very nice paper, which is in a way reproduced in Lifshitz-Petayevsky's volume of Landau-Lifshitz course, Beliaev. 58. Is it 58? I think 58. And actually, Beliaev looked at the line width at 1 hour. So basically, he looked at the imaginary part of self-energy for bosons. And the imaginary part of self-energy, 1 hour tau, is at small q, is 3 q to power 5 divided by 640 pi. H bar cube and not density M. And this is limit, of course, of weak interaction still.
This is what is called the constant of the order of 1, yeah?
Right, so actually, the funny thing is that this 1 hour tau that yesterday Misha was talking about very briefly, there are also this huge exponents, I mean, like Q to H power, but in addition, there is a constant order of 1 of the same kind. And this is almost unavoidable because it's high order perturbation theory. So 1 hour 2 pi goes into some strange power. And
that's
what dimension?
Sorry? It's 3D.
Just for 1?
No, it's 3-dimensional case. It's a three-dimensional case. And you can see from dimensions, because it's q to fifths, and this is q cubed, so q squared over m is energy. Well, h bar is somewhere. Maybe h bar is right.
Where's the interaction?
Right.
It's not in there?
As far as I remember, actually, it's independent of interactions. The only like small parameter is q here. And q is small compared, and that was actually the good side of your question. So it's important that interaction is weak, but Q is even smaller than mu, and then interaction cancels out. Now, and actually, that's that tells me that perturbation theory here is somewhat tricky, because when you start drawing lines, there are lines that are in a way not small because they contain this psi naught. Nevertheless, in 3D, it's all beautifully works. So now let's look at 1D just for a second. And actually, there was another great question about U and V. So they indeed somewhat counterintuitively divergent at small p. And another part of, another caveat that I would like to make is to, we can try to look what are the occupations of higher energy states, not p equals zero, but p not equals zero, right? So I'm going now to part two of the reminders. Maybe just for a second. So again, let me summarize what David was telling. So there is some spectrum omega fq which is linear and then quadratic. Mm-hmm. If I cut it, I can plot S of omega as a function, S is a function of omega fixed q. So epsilon of q is a center, and there is some Lorentzian vis-a-vis 1/tau vis-a-vis Beliaev's 1/tau. So now going to both liquid in 1D. Here I'm careful enough not to say BEC, and you'll see in a second why. What I would like to do is to calculate blackboard talk. It's also a chalk and blackboard talk. So is there another component? Yeah, no, I found something here for a while. So we can look at occupation factors above the ground state and just look how many particles are not there, right? Now, which my hands? Sum over P. I will use this transformation, right? So NP is psi dagger psi. So this guy will do some harm. It will be VP squared, right? And then I plug in this line and we'll get this integral is up to mu, but I should take it from the smallest possible momentum that is just the one over the length of the system. That's it, right? So and this is diverging when L goes to infinity in 1D. So higher dimensions are okay, right? Because it's benign. And in 1D is better. So there is no condensate in 1D. But nothing can be understand that the culprits are the long wavelengths excitations. So here another great idea came to describe 1D Bose system as a liquid. And again, I repeat again, the time and office is a field. I try to look at the literature, and maybe it sounds like an anecdote, but I believe that Popov 72 paper was the earliest I found. And there was then a very nice paper of Haldane in 81. And again, I'm sounding like Russia is the motherland of elephants, I understand, but nevertheless. nevertheless, that's what I think. but I will be referring mostly to this paper, which, again, the final formulas here can be understood. But I think that they really the machinery and things that you can crank and find new things. This one is way better. So I'll just sloppify this paper. So I'll make it. So imagine that you have just a 1D liquid, okay, and as a continuous medium, I can introduce a displacement field, okay, so I'll call it phi. And then the density, or rather the variation of density from the constant value would be d phi dx, okay, so it's delta rho. And phi is dimensionless. And then I can also introduce velocity of unit volume, which will be defined dt. And to make it proper dimensional, I'll put 1 over n naught, where n naught is a net density, unperturbed density of the system. Then I can write Lagrangian just as a difference between the kinetic energy density, which is 1 over 2m n naught d phi dt squared, and the potential energy, which is due to compressibility, d phi dx squared. So then I like Hamiltonian more than Lagrangian, so one can do the canonic transformation, I mean, going from d phi dt to a new field theta, so that d theta dx plays a role of the conjugate momentum, right? So then I'll have coordinate phi and momentum theta. Or more precisely, coordinate d phi dx and momentum theta, or coordinate phi and momentum d theta dx. It depends on how you like your variables cooked. And after this transformation, again, perhaps I'm missing some constant, multiplicative constant, but it looks like that. Right, so I just write pq dot, h is pq dot minus l, or pi, well, minus l, and then I express q dot in terms of p, like in mechanics, but it's a continuous system, so it's a little bit more complicated, but essentially the same thing. So here I introduced, so here I had constants d mu, dn, and mass, if you wish. And here to these constants u and k, and they are nicer in a way, because so u is just the velocity of sound in the system, so it's square root pi n naught of m, roughly it's this coming from this term, times d mu dn, right? So the stiffer the system, the higher the velocity, and k is maybe vaguely called quantum parameter. It shows basically how big are the fluctuations, quantum fluctuations of phi in the system. So it's pi n naught over mu, n naught is a density. So n naught over m has dimensionality of velocity, and you can think of a characteristic velocity of a particle with momentum n naught. So if it would be fermions, which are the naught, then it will be fermi velocity divided by the collective velocity, by the sound velocity.
In this representation, if you would calculate, say, the partition function, should we integrate independently on t times phi or what?
If you're talking about the
continuation relation, you're going to write that.
Right, I will, yeah. I'll try. So, again, up to sines dx phi theta is I h bar delta, well, this is of x, this is of y, x minus y.
Yeah, that is, yeah, I understand that initially, if you consider phi as a operator, but in Lagrangian, representation,
right. So if you want to write continuum in,
just a Poisson bracket.
Well, you can write. So if you're asking about functional integral, yeah, you can write in principle average over field phi. It's a functional integral over all the resistance of phi with the action of this kind. So in this respect, I think that essentially the commutation relation in Hamiltonian gives full quantum mechanics.
In principle, the Hamiltonian you can also use for
path integral. Yeah, you can, but then you have another term which is analog of this pq dot, and you have back to Lagrangian as far as I understand.
In this case, in complex way.
Right, yeah. So if it would be one variable, it would be dp dq. That's true.
For the fermion system, we can have the possible which identity. We can derive this from operator expansion. I'm not sure for the bosonic part, is it possible to
derive again? Can you repeat?
Derive this Hamiltonian from the original Hamiltonian using this operator product expansion.
I don't. Well, I understand your question. I don't know about. Well, I don't know how to.
It's just hydrated, probably it will be not easy to derive, but it's just hydrated, Popov's hydrodynamic.
Well, okay, but the question is whether you can derive it in a rigorous, well, let's call it rigorous way from microscopic, and I don't know. I don't know about bosons.
Another question that we want to describe the boson model.
Right. Yes. So thanks. So here, what is crucial here is that this is Galilean invariant system, and actually I wrote this first line from Galilean invariants. Okay, this term is just homogeneity of space with respect to shifts, right? So in particular, it gives, as I said, gives a relation between the velocity and this parameter k. So for Hubbard model, you may write from general considerations a similar thing with cosine. And in principle, it has a gap. But then you can play games, for example, introduce chemical potential and destroy the gap just by doping, so to speak. Okay? You'll get, again, eventually the same kind of Lagrangian. However, there will be no relation between U and K, and there will be two independent parameters, which is a standard starting point for Lagrangian liquid. Okay? So if you wish, if you like Lagrangian liquid, this selection of this very specific relation between U and K.
The cosine term for the fermion system is from Wundt-Clapp scattering.
Yes.
Quite natural. I'm not sure whether in this bosonic system is arrived from similar origin. You want to have.
I understand. I think that if you have a lattice, you'll get cosine anyway for bosons as well. Again, I didn't think about this, you know, at any depth, so. And perhaps it's interesting because they can do lattices. I didn't think about it. Right, so maybe to finish this thing, so the limit of weak interactions correspond to small u. So if we have short-range weak interaction, k is large. Okay. And if we go to short-range but stronger interaction, k goes down, but it never crosses 1. Okay, so for short range, like delta function interaction, if I crank up the interaction constant, k goes from infinity to 1, but always larger than 1. It doesn't cross 1. Okay, okay, so now two more relations for the 1D Bose liquid. These are what is the density and what is the boson. So again, it's a continuous approximation, okay? And it's a bit different from what Leon suggested yesterday as a lattice. And still, I guess that for, well, it's not a way to dump the question, but the things that I'll be discussing today perhaps are poor to describe by lattice anyway, by Wigner crystal anyway, because I will be looking at short-range interaction, and then the fluctuations are big, and I simply don't think it's possible to make a relation to yesterday's discussion. Anyway, so in this continuous approximation, the creation of a boson at point xt is just the finite displacement operator. So theta is infinitesimal, the operator of infinitesimal shift of all the liquid, say, to the right from point x. Okay, so I take this 1D system, mark some point x, and then shift all particles to the right of it by some distance leftwise. And then I have a bump of density, right? So the creation of this bump is Psi Dagger. And I hope I wrote correctly the coefficient here. So basically, to have just one boson, I have to have coefficient 1 here, I believe. Now, the density has, I would say, two distinct parts. The first part is just the one that I already talked about. It's the smooth part of density. But also, I may try to phenomenologically to account for components of the density which are short wavelengths with the wavelengths of order of pi and naught, 2 pi and naught, 4 pi and naught, and so on. Okay, so it's analog of 2kf, 4kf, and so on for fermions. And this part is given by some e to 2 pi I Lx, I guess, and not Lx, okay? So this would be just the standing wave of density, which is not the case because there are quantum fluctuations. So if for any reason I would be able to freeze phi, then I would have just a stellatory wave, but because of quantum fluctuations, this thing is breathing, and this part will kind of smear the oscillatory component of the density. And this expression perhaps is good for describing perturbations with wave vectors small compared to this characteristic momentum, mu, or for this part, q minus 2 pi l and naught must be much less than mu. So I cannot cover the entire phase space, the entire set of wave vectors with this kind of description, but I may try looking at small q, for example, to start with. So at small q, the spectrum of elementary excitations, right, it's quadratic Hamiltonian, so I can just... Okay, there is one.
It's like crystal, but it's.
It is like crystal, but it's not, yes. So this gives me the incipient period of the crystal, okay? But this thing will destroy crystal, perfect crystalline order because phi fluctuates.
Yeah, but that is that in the background you have a crystal and fluctuations. So on big distances, much bigger than 1 over n0, it is crystal, but then it becomes not.
I would say it's slightly different. So, sorry?
Why it is not liquid in real?
It is liquid. It is liquid. It is liquid. Sorry?
No difference.
Between?
Liquid and
crystal. Just a second. So it is liquid in the sense that there are no long-range correlations, right?
But there is a strong short-range crystal.
But... If I crank up interactions, I thought about skipping, but imagine that I calculate density-density correlation function, just static one, okay? So forget about time, and I just look at d rho of x, d rho of zero, okay? So average d rho, of course, is zero, because phi fluctuates, okay, and I can just average over all possible values of phi. And this, okay, but this guy is not. And if I expand it in Fourier series, okay, and look, for example, at Fourier component with wave vector close to 2 pi L n naught. 2 pi n naught. Let's set L equals to 1, okay? So I'll be looking at the mode 2 pi I n naught. Then, in addition to this oscillatory function, that of course will come from this thing, there will be average okay, and we are blessed with the quadratic Hamiltonian. So this is just the Bayh-Wheeler factor.
That is power light.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I will need it anyway. So. 2 times phi minus phi, well, phi of x minus phi of 0 squared average. And this is logarithm, so this is power law. And now we see that, okay, this correlation will decay, but how fast does it decay? It depends on the quantum fluctuations of phi. So it will depend eventually on this parameter k. And if k is large, then it decays extremely fast. It's power k minus 1. So this thing, if I remember right, behaves as 1 over x to the power k minus 1. Okay? And for large k. So free particles is k very large, and then this power the exponent is high and the decay is fast.
There is no symmetry between k and 1 over k?
For this particular quantity, there is no symmetry between k and 1 over k. For this particular quantity, fluctuations that...
You need also to change theta phi.
Yeah, and it does... Well, yeah.
How can this formula...
Say again?
The expansion of data rule.
Yes. Sorry?
How to derive this formula?
Okay, so there is no macroscopic derivation. The sign of that is that I put here nothing in front, but it's definitely cheating. Okay, there are some amplitudes. To the best of my knowledge, okay, you may try to derive this part of expansion for specific models. I know results for fermionic model, Calandra-Sutherland model, where this kind of expansion was derived in work actually done here by Alex Kamenev and I don't remember his co-author. They explicitly built this operator for the Calandra-Sutherland. So the general expansion is written, for example, in Haldane's review. It's wonderful, simple. Now, if you want to know these constants, they are model dependent. And for a specific model, they were evaluated. That's all I can tell. okay, so actually I benefited from this discussion. So getting back to the spectrum, so Hamiltonian is quadratic. So there are spectrum elementary excitations, which is just linear. And if I want to look at constant Q scan and plot structure factor S as a function of omega, then again, what I need to calculate is gradient phi correlation function at Q omega. And there is no surprise that will give me a delta function, right? Because basically, I have this term, right? It's linear in phi. I have Hamiltonian, which is quadratic in phi. So phi just evolves as a free propagation. So phi is a function of x minus vt. X minus vt. Because it's x minus vt, inevitably, I'll get a delta function at omega equals vq. Well, not v, but u, sorry, velocity. So there is... this position is delta function. And I want to emphasize that actually within this Hamiltonian, as far as I understand, it's impossible to broaden the delta function. It's just quadratic Hamiltonian, so that's about it. But
how
now...
inharmonicity?
Right. It's a good question. So again, it takes me slightly away. If I just boldly add here unharmonic terms, which that's the simplest one is d phi cube. And I know how to derive this term for fermions. I don't know how to derive it for bosons. And maybe it will be a different term.
We understand that once we have some liquid, should be higher order term.
Right. I guess that, again, for bosons, perhaps
it's... You derive it, because you do not derive, you just...
No, but what I'm saying is that I didn't think about it much. I think that for bosons, maybe it's d phi to the fourth rather than cubic. Okay, that's possible. But the point that I would like to make is a bit different. So suppose you write this term, okay, or phi to the fourth, and then try perturbatively account for it, okay?
One term, I guess, can be written or maybe right away from Galilean invariance, something like, and it's just kinetic energy, right? You have a kinetic energy corresponds just to... the motion of the system.
Right, no, but the motion, actually it's here, right? So it is a bit more complicated.
The term like that, which contains density. Density times
mv
squared.
Okay, look, in principle it's correct. I mean, for fermions, I can tell you how to derive this term, okay? And it's also has Javisky's dust or whatever. There is some very fancy myth behind it, but for fermions, I do know how to do it, and basically, you take your Fermi gas and put it at higher velocity, and in the energy of the Fermi gas, there is a p cube term, right? So pf cube term. So this cube already produces you this kind of terms. But what I would like to emphasize here is different. So suppose you add these kind of things to Hamiltonian, okay, and then you try to do perturbation theory in order to find the width of delta function. It means that you want to sit on mass shell, okay, and calculate imaginary part of some self-energy at the mass shell. Now we are in 1D, okay, and the spectrum is linear. So the momentum conservation yields then energy conservation as well. If you're on mass shell, you have divergent perturbation theory. The very first non-zero term in the perturbation theory will be infinity. Okay, so I do not know how to collect this kind of series. I don't know how to deal with bosons. For the bosonization of fermionic problem, this is a known difficulty. Okay, many people bounce off it. There is a paper of Samohin in 96, I believe, which did some self-consistent Born approximation. It yields some reasonable results qualitatively, but fails in, I mean, many things, including some conservation laws. And basically, it's an open question. So how to do in bosons perturbation theory with respect to nonlinearity is not known, and it is a difficulty. So actually,
as singular, if you had a curvature in the bosons.
Yeah, then you go to a different problem because then you get zeros instead of infinities. Actually, so it is. I mean, it is also bad. I agree with zeros because. So you may introduce first some curvature in the one-dimensional spectrum, okay, and then try to do perturbation theory around it. But then the problem is that, again, because of conservation laws, you'll be getting zeros in perturbation theory extensively. And that comes from this statement that Misha yesterday did, that if you have two particles and collide them, they just change, trade places, and that's it. I mean, so again, with perturbation theory in bosons, apparently it didn't do much good so far.
Exactly. So models don't put these things.
Yes, they are, and that's I'll be talking about.
You're
this.
Get to them.
Yeah, okay. I hope.
why don't you ignore the questions and get?
No. Look, I mean, I'm very selfish because actually.
That's why we start at 10 o'clock.
And also, I'm gaining, I guess, more than maybe than you guys. So.
Can I ask one question?
Yeah, sure.
When you compute in density density correlation, yeah, you write as correlation of grad phi, why don't you use also these waves?
Yeah, it's coming.
It's coming.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, thanks for Valerie's question. So, it's not that in static correlation function, right? In static correlation function, there is this this oscillatory part, which also, although it's dumped, it's 1 over x times oscillatory function, okay? So, there is some suspicious point in this graph omega q. There is point, say, 2 pi n node, as well as 4 pi node and so on, where I suspect something happens at small omegas, because even in static correlation function, I do have some, you know, some reminiscence of the order, right? So then I may try to look at the dynamic correlation function at q close to this value, right? And for that, I have to look at these parts, do a similar calculation with xt. Okay? But it will be very similar, right? I'll get, again, logarithmic divergence here of this correlation function. And that leads to a non-zero value of s everywhere above some corner, some wedge, which has slope u, okay? So these two lines are q minus 2 pi and not absolute value.
Are you drawing on the, do you mean that is omega's function of q?
Okay, so as to spectrum of elementary excitations, this is it, okay? Now I'm trying to look at this plane and see where the structure factor is not zero, okay? So what I'm saying is that, it's, first of all, it's not zero at this line. Okay, so if I cut it with vertical line, I'll get a delta function. But in addition to that, at way larger q's, 2 pi and nod, okay, there is another portion of space where the structure factor is not zero even at small omegas. Specifically, at this particular value of q, it's not zero even in the limit omega to zero. Okay. So now I'm running out of space on the board. So let me just extend this axis, okay? And I break it here, so it's some other part of the space. So there is this line, which I call omega minus, okay? And if I do a vertical cut here and plot S of omega as a function of, S as a function of omega at this Q, I'll get a power law, as Victor kind of suggested. It will be a positive exponent. Power law is a positive exponent. Goes to zero. It is not a collective model. I'll tell a little bit about this a bit later. Right. So, okay. For fermions, it would be a scattering at 2kF. So here, it is a creation of excitation with large wave vector. Now, because we have kind of incipient order, okay, there are excitations that are soft at this specific large wave vector. Okay, so this is the kind of blah blah answer, but there'll be more specific answer a bit later. Well, Kahn anomaly starts with Fermi surface, right? So in this respect, if you allow me to use analogy with fermions, yes, it is Kahn anomaly, but it's boson. So okay, so.
If K is usually small, less than one, it will diverge, right?
Right. So from this model, this point, like for this model for bosons, with short range repulsion, I cannot go through K equals one. But you are right that for repulsive, yeah. So what was yesterday actually were fermions with repulsion, and then it explodes here. Okay. So basically, what I'm saying that this is the edge of spectrum. So structure factor is zero below and non-zero above, in this at least picture, there is no way to glue together small q and large q. So how to bridge these two limits is not clear within the harmonic liquid picture. So that is one of motivations to look at this problem further. Another motivation is that, okay, I have this delta function, and I do not know how to broaden it within the model. And, well, there is experiment in principle on 1D structure factor. There's a number of experiments. One of them is done in ETH. I think it's Essling group, PRL01. And the claim is that when they go somehow from 3D to 1D case, in some sense, I don't know how to interpret it, in some sense, the structure factor actually becomes wider. So if it's delta function in 3D, it becomes something wider in 1D. So there is no way to interpret this kind of data or understand them within this picture. So these are two, I would say, motivations to look further. Now, how to look further, and here's
the... May I ask you, because
yes,
I'm a little surprised, because in the Bose liquid in 1D, we have two types of soft excitations, phonons and current states. Suppose I have a ring.
Yeah.
Super current state with the first rotating quantum is roughly the same energy as phonon.
Yeah, it's just no, but it's just a discrete mode. Of course, when you quantize, you have to.
Yeah, it gives you the right momentum at low energies as a transfer. On top of this, when you excite the current state, you can also address it with quantum and many of them.
Yeah, but you're just talking about k equals. If you wish, you're talking about k equals zero phonon and k not equals zero. That's all.
No, I'm talking that current state has a momentum 2 pi and zero. That's exactly the momentum of the first current state.
No.
Yeah.
You mean in the ring, or
if you make the first current state, the momentum is 2 pi and 0.
I'm not sure that I understand,
and
because...
And it follows you the same energy, asymptotically it goes to 0, no, with the limit of infinite system size.
No, wait a minute, but if it's... I'm not sure...
And the rest you just build log.
Sorry?
If you know the analogy with fermions,
yes.
Backscattering is exactly the same as a current state in the bosonic language. The first rotating state of bosons in fermionic language is representing backscattering.
There is no backscattering.
Okay, the electron transfer from left to right one.
Again, in the Hamiltonian, there is nothing that causes this transfer.
Hamiltonian is a Hamiltonian. There are bosons, interacting bosons.
Yes.
This is an effective Hamiltonian to describe certain range,
right,
of couplings. But there are also zero modes, which are rotating states. And the Hamiltonian has sectors. This is Hamiltonian
right,
for
so
sector, not rotating. There is
yes,
rotating
yes,
state.
So it's a separate sector, is it true?
Yeah.
Separate sector. What do you mean that's it?
That's the complete description of the bosonic language.
No, I think it's incorrect. So if you're talking about many body states, there are more complicated states. If you're talking about Hamiltonian to be diagonal in this basis that you're talking about, it's not diagonal. So this specific Hamiltonian will be diagonal, but this is a model.
I'm saying that the bosonic system, as we know it, has this bosonic part, current states, and whenever you change current states, they couple to phonons. And this is written explicitly in Hamiltonian language.
Okay, then maybe we know different things. So again, I understand that you can introduce some basis of states, okay? But also understand that you should calculate matrix elements of the Hamiltonian, just a second, let me finish, matrix elements of Hamiltonian between the states, okay? And what I'm saying is that in your basis, the true Hamiltonian is not diagonal. Do you agree with that?
Let me repeat. I know all the matrix elements between the phonons and current states, all of them. Yes, I have a Hilbert space of current states and phonons, and I know all matrix elements in this Hamiltonian.
Okay, so of the true Hamiltonian.
I already told you the Hilbert space, and I say I know all the matrix elements in this Hilbert space.
Okay, again, what means you know?
Hamiltonian.
Just a second. So this Hamiltonian, this particular Hamiltonian has lots of zeros. It's not this one. So the real one does have matrix elements between the rotating state and phonon states, and actually between different phonon states as well. Do you agree with that?
Say, well, in the harmonic level, there is nothing.
On the harmonic level, there is nothing. There is delta function. Okay, so now, indeed, you in the true Hamiltonian, you have matrix elements between different states, okay, with different wave vectors, different phonon states, and also rotating states.
That's right.
Okay? So my point is that if you introduce this term somehow here, I don't know how, but say it's d phi cube, okay, and try to do perturbation theory in this d phi cube, it's badly divergent, and I do not know how to handle it. I don't know how to smear the delta function by this kind of nonlinear terms.
I'm not about this.
Okay.
I'm about the singularity which you show on the right. This can be calculated easily.
The singularity shown on the right. You mean this one?
Yeah.
Okay, so to the best of my knowledge, this singularity for arbitrary Q, for arbitrary Q, cannot be calculated easily. For
only Q as you specified, it has to be much smaller than mu or Q minus 2 pi L and...
Yeah, so in the vicinity of this point, it's a trivial problem that was done many times. Okay, so... This is just calculation of this correlation function. If you're talking about that, yeah, it's done.
Okay.
And here's the answer.
There's no one.
Sorry? I think
in the X there's no one. In the K.
In the X, yeah, you're right. In the X there is no one. Right. So here omega minus this absolute value of Q minus 2 pi naught to pair K minus 1.
Yeah.
So that's it. But again, it's near this point, okay? And then the question is, suppose I go away from this point. I think that this thing will remain, but how it changes with Q? That is a question that actually we can answer in some cases, but it would be nice to understand it fully.
It vanishes. So there's no, it's not 1 over.
Sorry, sir?
It's not 1 over. It's
just... yeah, right. Yeah. Sorry, thanks. Yep. Okay, so what I would like to do now is to take advantage of exactly this little model, which is Lib-Linegar model. My goal is first is to somehow bring connection of this phenomenology with Lib-Linegar and see where Lib-Linegar can take us further than phenomenology. So, it's a very simple Hamiltonian. It's just a free particle term plus interactions. Which are contact repulsion, and interaction is parameterized by constant c, which has dimensionality of velocity, right? So dimensionless interaction strength is mc over n naught, and weak interaction corresponds to small gamma. So now It's fully solvable in the sense that it's a durable model and there is Beth-Ansatz construction for it, which allows to find the entire spectrum of many body states. So how am I, as a simple person, would understand what the many body states are? Well, I don't know, but at least looking at the paper of Lieb and Linegar, I understand that I can parameterize, well, I can look at states at given momentum p, all right? And if I fix, if I look at the smallest possible energy of the state as a function of p, there is some dispersion law. It became known as Lieb 2, epsilon 2 of p. So this point is 2 pi and not to bring connection with this picture. And basically, there was this question about the states. So there's yet another connection with solvable models. This point corresponds to the end, to the point where the lowest energy excitation hits zero. Okay. Now, in Beth-Ansatz, it means some very specific very specific motion of eigenstates of rapidities. And yeah, and I will be not talking about it. Now, there is another mode that is somehow distinguished between various solutions of Beth-Ansatz equations. And this mode looks very similar to the Bogoliubov mode as I already described. So it's linear at small p. Maybe epsilon is better. And it is p squared over 2m at very large p. And if gamma is small, actually, it looks very much like Bogoliubov mode with some caveats that are not completely resolved as of yesterday night. Now, I think that just to but maybe not. But maybe just, you know, to entertain you a little bit, let me... yeah, so just for one sec. So this is just a picture from a Lieb-Linegar paper. So this is Lieb 2, see number 2, and it goes to zero somewhere here. And this is Lieb 1, which is just a numerical solution of their Beth-Ansatz equations for spectrum. And this is very...
Is it a particular type of state?
Or it's a particular state. So
is it sort of simple to represent in the Beth-Ansatz? Or something? Is it important physically in the solution, or is it just something that's convenient mathematically?
Yeah, just taking words from it. So, I mean, in their solution, they just tell, okay, if we move this rapidity to this, from this point to this point, we'll have this mode. Okay? Now, so mathematically, it's beautiful, but they don't tell why it should be Bogoliubov mode. Now, jumping ahead, in the Fermi representation of this model, which I'll talk about, actually, this is something very simple. You can simply visualize the states. Okay, and I'll tell about this. But our motivation was, okay, there is a beautiful state. What about observable quantities? So can we just see what happens, the structure factor around these two lines. And as to this line, I believe it, well, okay, it must be this one. It must be this edge. But the structure factor would better diverge around this line. To make it Bogoliubov mode, you would like structure factor to diverge around it. Not necessarily, right? Well, no. I think it's maximum. Okay.
Why is it going to have a structure mode after 2 pi?
Okay, so it keeps repeating indeed, so it's symmetric around this point. Now, technically, I don't know whether it was just because it keeps repeating and they realized it, or technically it becomes actually more difficult to study this branch. It's better to study this branch. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. So one more thing. So what are the benefits of this model? I mean, the immediate benefit, which I think is pretty minuscule, is that for phenomenology, for the liquid model, you can derive your parameters k and u. Just from Beth-Ansatz, you can find compressibility, and then find the velocity and find this parameter k. Okay, so it's not a big deal. But I will need some simple facts, so I'll just draw a picture that velocity is a function of gamma. And gamma, again, is mc over n naught. First is increasing a square root, and it saturates eventually. At the value, you may guess, pi n naught over m. So this is a value corresponding to all bosons so strongly repelling each other that they behave like impenetrable particles, which are fermions, which is Chong-Girardot model, free fermions, and this is just fermi velocity. Nothing but that. So, and there are zillions of papers that are just utilize this fact. K is proportional to 1 over gamma when gamma is much less than 1. K minus 1 is proportional to 1 over gamma where gamma is large. Okay, so for strong repulsion, it's almost K equals 1, meaning free fermions. And for gamma much less than 1, K is huge. And that is in agreement with the almost free bosons that I discussed. But, okay, fine. But how about the observable quantity? So structure factor, in principle, one may try, well, I mean, a lay person like me can say, okay, there are Zamolodchikov, Lukyanov form factors. But there are specialists in it, and one of them is J.S. Cox. That basically, as far as he can go, is that to use this very sophisticated math to put it into the computer eventually, and just to make simulation possible. What he found for the structure factor is shown in these two pictures. Well, he has way more, but I just took two that I like. So first of all, look at this. So this is plane omega k, and this gray area is where the structure factor is not zero. It reminds you, hopefully, yesterday's talk about fermions, except that the darker area, which corresponds to larger S, is near the upper edge, and the slower boundary, which in this part corresponds to this corner, is like the edge of spectrum where S goes to zero. So and here is a constant Q scans a different value of gamma at not so small k, at k close to pi n naught over m. To pi n naught, sorry, without m. K equals pi n naught. So in fermion language, it's kf. So it is not 2kf, but just kf. So as you see, if you look, for example, at gamma equals 5, so the lower edge indeed goes to 0, and the upper edge here, it has a maximum, but the accuracy is not good enough to see whether it's divergence or a maximum or else. Okay, so that's all that numerics tells you for now. We would like to understand what happens here, actually. Is there a real divergence? And if yes, then how to describe it? So I guess it.
That's going to be special to the integrable model.
I think that there will be two statements. One I think is special to the integrable model, another one I hope is more general. Okay. This thing didn't go. Okay, it will. Now I guess it only about another 15, 20 minutes and. So suppose you want to calculate SFQ omega by shit, hate it.
Well, you need it like that.
No. Yeah. I just wanted to show two things. So suppose I do something like Lemma representation for S, and I'll write sum over all states of a basis that some of us know, but not me. zero is ground state, and then I have to obey conservation law, so the energy of a state is equal to omega, and momentum of a state is equal to Q. Okay? So it's a general formula, and in principle, if one knows lambdas, then the thing is done. And basically, this is the way how numerically people calculate it. They know huge sectors in Hilbert space for these matrix elements. Now, on our simplified level, I would say that, okay, I know that rho Q is sum over K, psi K plus Q, dagger psi K. And now, on the physical grounds, I know that actually the states that are heavily occupied by bosons, okay, are limited in K space. So if I look at epsilon of K, right, there is some region in K space, size is the order of mu, where there are lots of bosons. And I already alluded to this when I discussed the 3D case, when we had this up and vp proportional to square root mu over p, okay? This is indication that indeed states with p less than mu are occupied. And then the distribution function nk goes down when I am outside this region. So let's just try to use this physical idea. And what I would like to do is first to look at this quantity at Q much larger than this region. But at any value of interaction strength. Okay, so this is actually one of the limits that we can do, large Q and any gamma. And jumping ahead, other limits that we can do also is large gamma, but any Q. Any Q and gamma much larger than 1. So these two limits can be done. They obviously have an overlap, right? Large Q, large gamma. And when we check that, completely different techniques, well, approaches, I would say, give results that agree in the region where the two methods are applicable. So I'll start with one. So if I want to look at large Q, I understand that I would like to create a particle in the, I would like to create a hole in a state where there are particles, right? So in the parameter psi k, I better hit somewhere here because I have to annihilate somebody. There is nobody to annihilate here. Okay, so I must have a hole here. And if Q is large, I create a particle somewhere far. Okay, I create a particle where they're almost free. If you remember, when you looked at Bogoliubov spectrum, it was parabolic eventually, like for free particles. So let's just try to use a simple idea and construct a reduction of this operator to the Hilbert to this Hilbert part of Hilbert space where this operator acts on the portion of space with small vectors, and this one acts on portion of space with large vectors where particles will be treated as free particles. So in other words, I want to replace this full expression.
You can, in this formula, you can either take k small or k plus q small.
Right, yeah, so it will be two parts. Basically, it's complex conjugate, Hermitian conjugate parts. All right. So let's, just for thinking, let's take k small and k plus q large. So then what I would like to do is to confine K to this, well, okay, to the phase space mu, okay, and then replace this psi K by already erased, no, not erased, by this operator, which creates a particle, or I can use conjugate, creates a hole in hydrodynamic approximation. Okay, so once again, this state psi k acts in subspace with small wave vectors. I would like to treat this subspace as liquid. This particle is far away in k space. It has different velocity. Okay, and I will treat it separately as a free particle. So instead of this expression, I'll write dx d dagger of x, I'll tell what is it, times psi hydrodynamic of x. Okay, so psi hydrodynamic is this one, and it acts on the subspace of states with smaller vectors. And d dagger is a state which is constructed within a band with width, say, of order of mu. But this whole band is far away from this one. So I would like this distance.
With the momentum, not energy.
Yeah. So I'd like this distance q be much larger than mu. Okay. So basically, d dagger is proportional to sum over some subspace p less than mu e to I px psi p plus q dagger. Okay, so this is my operator D, and then the structure factor S of q omega is proportional to the Fourier transform of correlator where B is this projected, the density projected on this subspace. So operator B dagger is D dagger of XT.
And here you also have D dagger.
There must be one of them.
There's no Q in this Fourier, in the last part.
Sorry?
Q is sitting in the definition of D dagger. Right,
so you're right, yes, sorry. So, yeah, it's counterintuitive. Right. So let me do maybe... it's notations on paper, which I hate, actually, but okay, so... nevertheless, it should be no Q here, because Q is here, and P is small. I'm sorry. okay, e to I theta of xt, okay? So this is my operator, and... basically, I declared some gross simplification of Hamiltonian. I told that H, my full Hamiltonian, is sum of two. The first part is the hydrodynamic part, which describes this variable theta and conjugate phi. And it was written before this k and 1 over k. Okay. And second part is the part for d particle, which is just a free particle. This HD is basically is a particle that we can also linearize spectrum with this narrow band, and then I'll get epsilon of q plus I d dx psi. Minus, maybe. And maybe I'm missing some. It's also Q over M here. Yeah, no, it's right dimensionality. So again, what did I do? I replaced the low energy Hamiltonian by hydrodynamic Hamiltonian.
Linear expansion near this point.
Yes, linear expansion near this point. So several things that went into this. I don't know, simplification, short of a better term. So this is just Hamiltonian for the low energy excitations, where I will create a hole. This is a Hamiltonian for the particles that I create, which is just a free particle. And I did away interactions between low and high energy particles. I will talk a little bit very briefly about it. But suppose, let's start with that, okay? So then calculation actually becomes pretty simple, because the correlator BB dagger, because Hamiltonian is a sum, is a product DD dagger times e to I theta e to minus I theta. Okay? So this one is our old friend. It's the bywater factor.
In I don't want to nitpick, but it should be D in the last line.
Sorry?
The HD.
Yeah, oh, thanks. Yeah. Thanks. Anything else? Okay. And this is free particle propagator. So basically, it's some delta function of x minus particle velocity Vd times t. So Vd is this QRM. So, okay, so this is a power law. This is delta function. You plug in, you may guess what you'll get. A power law. which looks like this. Omega minus epsilon 1 of q, absolute value to power mu 1. And mu 1 here, in principle, it must be a function of gamma and q. But this is limit of large q, and I'll discuss in which sense it's limit of large q. But as a function of gamma, it can be expressed in terms of the parameters of this liquid, right? So it can be expressed in terms of letter k. And it's 1 minus 1 over 2k of gamma.
And k is larger than 1.
Yeah, and once again, k is larger than 1. So the first graph as to the results I would like to plot.
It's run symmetrically on either side.
Sorry?
It's a symmetric run.
Yeah, thanks, yeah. That's asymmetric. It goes symmetrically.
It is symmetric.
It is symmetric, yes, yeah. It is symmetric, yeah.
Does that seem right?
Yes, it seems right, and B, I'll try to squeeze a half sentence from other limit, and you'll see how it happens. Quite beautiful in a way.
Because of large Q.
So, no, not because, but at large Q, yep. That's what happens, okay? So at large Q, what we have is that for...
This isn't the upper edge of the spectrum. This is embedded in the continuum.
Yes, so the whole line is in the continuum, right? So continuum is everywhere here.
Well, except...
It is.
In Leib-Lidinger, no. There was no continuum. There was zero spectral weight above.
No. This is actually not true, and this is the beauty of this model.
Oh, that's not true.
Yeah. So,
I thought you said in the picture that you showed that there was zero weight up there.
Okay. So this calculation is not good enough to see above this line. And thanks for the observation. Now, short detour. So for Calogero-Sutherland model, this quantity density is indeed exactly zero above a counterpart of this line.
Right.
Now, Leib-Lidinger is a surprising model where it's integrable. And in the sense, I will argue that actually this is a true divergence of S. It's not a maximum, it's a divergence. Nevertheless, it happens in full-blown continuum spectrum in the background, meaning that there are states well above as well as below this line.
States, and not just states, but also spectral weight and S.
Yes. Exactly, yeah.
States up there.
Right, I agree. Connected to the density, yeah. So, yes, S is not zero. And this limit where this is just absolute value, symmetric, it's limit of large Q. And basically, I think that for small gamma, this Q must be just larger than mu. Okay, so when you go down to smaller Qs, it becomes more and more asymmetric. And for some other limit, we can show that indeed this upper part goes down to zero when Q goes to zero. So there are some theta functions here, two theta functions with different weight. But these are smaller Qs. So at large Q, there's a whole picture. I would like to emphasize here the following thing. So if I have weakly interacting bosons, then K is very large and it's just one. If I have strongly interacting bosons, then K goes to 1 and it's 1 half. So let's remind ourselves later on that mu is a function of gamma, goes from 1 to 1 half when we crank up interaction from small to strong. Okay, so now just half a word about how good or embedded Hamiltonian. So I have thrown away the interaction terms. So in principle, there is H dHy, so d particle with hydrodynamic modes. And when I calculate the structure factor, basically I'm trying to calculate this kind of diagram. This is my external photon. This is the hydrodynamic mode coming, and this is d particle coming out. These kind of terms will create lines in between vertex corrections, which may be dangerous or not. So we check that they are not dangerous in terms of the power counting. So the question is only how big are they in terms of the magnitude. And the parameters that controls that magnitude is this parameter C, which was the interaction parameter in the model. It has dimensionality velocity, and it was sitting in front of delta function in the interaction, divided by the velocity of this d particle, so q over m, minus sound velocity. So again, we're talking about large q's, so q is much larger than m over u, than m times u, so I can throw away u here. And what I'll get is that the requirement that this is much less than 1 gives me q much larger than mc. Okay, so we had a condition q much larger than mu. And in addition, I think we need a condition q much larger than mc. If we're talking about weak interaction, then u is square root of c. And this is a stronger one. For strong interaction, it's different. For strong interaction, actually, this is overtaking.
Can I ask you, the external line is g, yeah?
The external line is a photon.
This one. Is it g line?
Oh, no, d is here.
G and g. So this
This is d. Let's put it here. This is d. Okay, and this is psi hydrodynamic.
Yeah, I understand. But external line.
External line, it's a photon. I, in order to probe the system, right? So in order to calculate density, I imagine that I write a Hamiltonian external field times psi, d dagger psi. Okay, so it couples to density.
So this is the bare vertex, basically?
It's a bare vertex, yes, this one. Okay, so this is just this interaction with external potential, and this is vertex correction, coming from the interaction between D and hydrodynamics.
So how do you determine this bare vertex in this?
Well, I mean,
so
just factorizes, so.
Sorry? Gibbs psi scattered in here.
Say it again?
This is like Gibbs psi scattered.
What I'm doing, I'm doing linear response, right? So into this Hamiltonian that I had, I add a potential U of X T times rho of xt, okay? And then develop perturbation C with respect to u. Okay. So the vertex here is just 1, right? So the constant in front of this thing is just 1. That's all. It's k independent, it's nothing. It's a scalar vertex. So I understand that time is... I think you should vote, actually. Let me do the following thing. I do it sometimes in the class. So there is one part left, fermion part, which kind of fits things together, and it's a great part about arbitrary wave vectors and strong interactions. But it's very late. So I'll close my eyes and turn away from the audience. And you vote. And the organizer, Victor, will tell me the result. 1, 2, 3.
What's the most?
Who is for continuing? Okay. I think the majority is for continuing, and actually, people need to go.
Yeah, so from now on, vote with your legs. I'm the first.
Can I ask a question about this formula? So if k is equal to 1, that seems to be that these guys are free fermions.
Yes.
So shouldn't they just have a delta function as opposed to a divergence with 1/2 power?
No, it's not.
Free
fermions, there is Q squared business. So
just like free delta.
Yeah, but omega cannot be bigger than epsilon 1 at least.
Say it again?
So for free fermions, if omega is bigger than epsilon 1, you should get 0.
Right, so let me tell, so for we're talking about basically small q, right? Or you want large q, I'm not sure it's there.
Well, it, is valid for large q.
Anyway, yeah, so it's large q. So what happens to, just a second.
You probably get an amplitude in front of it, which vanishes when you go to a non-interacting fermion.
But that's sort of, you know,
No, so I guess that... Actually, for okay, so this is order of limits indeed. So I have to obey this relation. Okay, so if c goes to infinity, it's not free fermions in the following sense. Actually, thanks. It's also a very nicely placed question. So you'll see in a second that the fermion counterpart of this problem has interaction potential between fermions in Q space of the following type. It's Q squared. Divided by C, this sum constant, I want to do it right, M squared C, okay? So, of course, when C is to infinity, it becomes small for small Q, for moderate Q. But I always can go to such a large Q that fermions interact strongly. So, once again, the peculiarity of this model in fermionic representation is that Fermi particles may be interacting weakly, but a very excited particle well above the Fermi level will be interacting strongly with the rest. And that brings this singularity with this explicit, with this specific value of mu, 1/2. I'll show it in a sec. So let me indeed very briefly to tell the other part of the story. So far we looked at large Q and arbitrary gamma, and now I would like to try to do something for arbitrary Qs. And I can do so for the strongly repelling Bose gas. Now, there is this beautiful mapping on the fermionic problem, and it all is the consequence of two things. One is great, which is this model is fully integrable, meaning that everything is determined by two particle scattering phase shifts. Okay, so if I know scattering shift of two particle, I know in principle the entire wave function. And then there is also elementary relation which reads two arctangens, arctan P over MC equals pi minus two arctan MC over P. You can check it. Now, this happens to be the scattering phase shift for symmetric wave function with interaction Hamiltonian C delta of X. Now, taking pi makes this to be scattering phase shift for asymmetric wave function if the potential has the form minus 2 over m squared C d2 dx twice delta of x. So so surprisingly, well, there are different statements in literature, but our point, and we're not the first in this respect, there was some earlier papers, that basically this mapping works for any interaction strength. It's not only Tong-Girardot model, it's any C, this mapping works. It is useful when the interaction is strong, but it works for any state. So in principle, there is a construction that allows you to build the fermionic functions. Suppose I know a function for a given energy with certain arrangements of coordinates. And then basically, I can construct the Bose function using these phase shifts, or I can construct the Fermi function using this, these phase shifts. And the Hamiltonian that would have the same spectrum is the free Hamiltonian plus interaction that is minus 2 over m squared c sum I larger than j delta 2 primes xi minus xj.
And bosons have usual delta function.
Sorry?
And bosons have usual delta function.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so bosons have this, fermions have
so
this.
That, one. Is for one on the point, yeah?
Sorry?
That is for one fixed momentum.
This is no. This is a Hamiltonian that describes the.
Hamiltonian, I understand, but this.
Oh, yeah. This is for two particles with relative momentum p. Okay. Okay. So now we are back, at least for a while, to yesterday. We have the Fermi Hamiltonian. The structure factor is a density correlation function, and it doesn't matter whether it's fermions or bosons. So the beautiful thing about it is that although the wave functions are related in some terrible way, the densities are not. So with density everything is fine, and I can just write fermionic densities. Okay, and then the question is like we discussed yesterday. So first of all, let me remember a question. So the meaning of these modes in terms of fermionic excitations actually is quite simple. So let's forget about this term for a second. Just kinetic energy of fermions. You have a Fermi C. You know the density. And if we create excitation with which is just one particle hole pair with a hole just below the Fermi level, just below, this will be this mode. And if we create an excitation that is has a particle just above the Fermi level and the hole below with vector q, this will be this mode. So both modes are particle hole excitations, but it's either a deep hole or high energy electron. And it immediately brings this whole thing about Fermi singularity and Mahan exciton physics. So these two guys interact. Here's the interaction. And therefore, there are parallel singularities in the structure factor. Now, so if I confine myself to small values of q squared, actually of q over mc, so if I look at small values, then it's exactly what was yesterday. And the exponent, this exponent mu1, will be as was discussed yesterday, V of q minus V of 0 divided by pi q over m. And V is small, that's why I can do it. And it will scale linearly with q. Now, an unusual thing here is that actually unlike yesterday's discussion, this potential here is very particular, as Victor asked. So the potential may be weak for large C and small q. But then when I go to large q, eventually this thing becomes large. What does it mean physically? It's actually nice. So imagine that you have Fermi C, and you want to look at excitations that corresponds somewhere high here, large q. So we already discussed that it would correspond to particle hole pair where I create a hole near the Fermi level and particle far above. Now, this particle interacts with right-moving fermions and left-moving fermions. And if q is large, so this is large. Well, so that q is larger than mc, then this interaction of this particle with these two modes is not weak. So I cannot use perturbation theory in scattering of these modes of this particle. But interaction between the left and right movers corresponds to vectors 2kf. And 2kf over mc is still small. So again, I can look at nominally weakly interacting Fermi gas.
For large C, right?
For large C, yes, for large C. So for large C, it's weakly interacting gas, but a high energy particle does interact strongly with the rest. So this can be treated as free fermions, but they scatter off a particle with a strong potential. So in addition to this term, which is basically Mahan term, there's another one. What is the other term? Yes, orthogonality. So there is also orthogonality term. which comes from creating electron hole, well, particle pairs on both ends. And the answer for mu1 is convenient to write in terms of the phase shifts. So instead of this Q over MC, basically I can introduce phase shift delta, which is 2 arctan Q over MC. And then taking into account both the exciton effect, Mechan, and the orthogonality catastrophe, Anderson, mu1 will be delta over pi times 1 over delta over 2 pi. So, and here delta, as you see, depends on Q and the interaction strength. So it allows me to first to plot mu1 as a function of wave vector. Delta goes to 0 when Q goes to 0, so it's something like this. Now the asymptote. Asymptote corresponds to large Q, so arctangens is pi over 2. Pi over 2, yeah. Yeah, so I guess I made a mistake. I missed factor of 2. No, I didn't miss. Actually, 2 is here. So it's pi over 2 times 2. It's pi, right? 1 half. One, yeah. Right, so 1 half. So, and this is the kind of a crescendo. So look at, you see 1 half here. And when we looked at large gamma with bosons, we actually got the same value exponent. Now, in addition, one can look at David's question and ask whether the singularity is symmetric when I go to smaller Q. So in this technique with fermions and strong interaction, we can do it explicitly. Basically, we can write down S in the very same form times new theta function of omega minus epsilon 1 of Q plus, say, theta of epsilon 1 minus omega. And so nu equals 0 would correspond to a single-sided singularity. This nu depends on Q. It can be expressed in terms of the phases. And what happens is that at Q small, this nu goes to 0. So indeed, the singularity becomes more and more one-sided when we move to smaller Q. Yeah, for large Q, nu goes to 1, yeah. It's some function of deltas of phases, and it can be just calculated. So I think I would like to make two remarks. So first of all, as I promised to make the statement, so I think that the fact that it's a power law is a generic thing in 1D. Now, you must, whether it's power law all the way to omega equals epsilon 1, so is there a real singularity? And this, I believe, is because of integrability. So the absence of three particle collisions just make the line width zero.
In the interval.
Right, yeah. So what we did explicitly, and it's kind of a check, sanity check, I would say, you take this model with Q squared interaction and calculate 1 over tau for three particle collisions. You're getting zero. It's zero for the specific potential. It's not zero for anything, well, for almost anything else. But for this one, it's zero. And actually, it's a demonstration of a simple fact that for integrable model, three particle collisions decompose into particle collisions. Another very brief comment is that at finite temperatures, so first of all, in integrable model, this thing is just at zero temperature surviving for any energies. Now, at finite temperatures, this thing is getting smeared. It's kind of a trivial effect because you smear the Fermi function. And one can get estimate of largest S simply by replacing this difference by temperature. So it's a power law of temperature, 1 over T to power mu1. It's not a 1 over T squared or any some other simple power. It's power that depends on the orthogonality and sophisticated physics, but it's a power law of temperature. So I think that's about it. So the main conclusion is that the power law divergence instead of delta function in S of Q omega is the manifestation of the main collective mode in 1D. Okay, so this lib 1, which, again, for me personally was a mystery, I think the meaning of it is that it's a parallel singularity in structure factor. And for integrable model, it's a true parallel singularity. For non-integrable model, we don't know how to do it, but perhaps there is smearing of the divergence. And I just, I guess I would like to end up with, I think, open question. So basically, the two most intriguing for me is that I learned from Nigel Cooper that it's possible in principle to measure the spectral function, so which is imaginary part of Green function for bosons. Basically, to tunnel the boson into the system. So MG for bosons is a good question. It, I mean, this feminization does terrible things to both Green function. It attaches a string. And if you linearize spectrum, everything is simple. But if you don't linearize spectrum, it's kiss of death. So it would be interesting how to wiggle out from this difficulty. And another thing is that it would be nice to understand how to get away from integrability, because the very notion of the mapping on fermions, which we used with pleasure, works only for the contact interaction. If we have a finite range interaction, as was alluded yesterday, the fermionization brings not only the local potential, it will be nothing. It brings a more than two-body interaction. It basically brings e to power psi dagger psi term into the Hamiltonian. And if you expand it, you have all powers of psi. So I don't know how to deal with it. So these are two open questions, and maybe they are of some interest. I guess I'll stop here.